3, 2, 1.
Welcome to It's Fabulous!
True personal stories.
Exfabula is a Milwaukee nonprofit committed to strengthening community bonds through the art of storytelling.
And that kicks off another edition of Exfabula Radio here on Lake Effect Weekend. I'm Rachel Owens, joined by Exfabula co-founder Leah Delaney. Welcome back.
Thanks so much. And per usual, I did bring stories with me today. Today's theme is Beyond the Headlines, the Refugee Experience. So, you know, while we're all scurrying around, it's the second week of December, trying to get all of our holiday business together, I think it's really important to sort of take a step outside of ourselves and kind of take a look around, look at humanity, see how everything's sort of falling in place or not, as it were. And with the immigration and the caravan of the Central American refugees dominating the news cycle, I think it's, you know, important to take a look at their experience might be like, you know, stepping into their shoes. And so today's show is all about the refugee experience. Back in November 2017, we held a story slam at the Grumman Museum, and the theme was refugees. So we have a longer story format today. This story was told by Dr. Chia Vang about her experience and how she and her family had to flee their homeland in Laos. So let's listen to her very important and very moving story, Dr. Chia Vang.
I am a historian. I sit in archives. I try to make sense of the things that are important, the things that the people in power think that are important. I've looked at thousands of refugee resettlement case files. I hear the voices of caseworkers writing about what refugees desire, what they want, what's good for them. But what's missing is I don't hear the voices of refugees, in particular among refugees that I've been studying for as long as I can remember. What do they think? How do they feel? What do they want? What are their hopes and dreams? I don't see that in the archives. I've been traveling around the world to listen to Hmong stories, to many countries in Europe, South America, North America, places in Asia, to learn about the stories of the refugees who have resettled in those places. I think I'm an okay historian. I've published many, many articles. I've written 3 books. A fourth one will be coming out next year from Oxford University Press. I've heard many stories, but there's still a lot more to be told. For me, as long as I can remember, there is this idea of getting ready, being prepared to leave. As many of you know, those of you who lived through the Vietnam War, the war ended for America in 1973, but it didn't end for my people in Laos, the Hmong people, and many others in Southeast Asia. I was born in 1971, so I have no personal memories of the war. That's a fact. But I have lots of memories about the lasting impact of the war. My family, I don't know this, I don't remember this. I was born in 71. But when 1975, when the leaders were evacuated, my parents told me that we actually tried to leave. We actually packed everything and tried to leave. But ahead of us, there was a shooting. So they decided to go back to our village. So from 1975 to 1979, we tried to live as normal as we could. And I grew up, so I have more memories. But again, the thing that I remember the most is that every day in our village, the line that there were a lot of American collaborators among refugees who left the country, but then many were retreated into the jungles. So they were resistance fighters. So the line between resistance fighters and ordinary people like my parents and me was blurred. So the new regime, the government forces, they experienced a great deal of difficulties trying to maintain some order in post-war Laos too. So what they did was they would sporadically fly planes over the Hmong villages. So we were taught as children to always, every time you hear the sound of a plane, you knew exactly where you had to go. You had to run into the jungle. So as an 8-year-old child, I was on my job. I wasn't old enough to go to the fields with my parents. So my job was to watch, to care for my 3-year-old brother, my 1-year-old brother, and my sister who's 1.5 years younger than me. So we knew every time there was a sound, we went to our hiding place. But one day, the most important day in my life was that in 1979, and just so you know, I don't know exactly what day that was. We didn't keep calendars the way that we do here in this country. Every minute I know what I'm doing in this country. But back then, we didn't have calendars. People didn't know exactly. We knew the year, the month, but we didn't know exactly what day. But that day, my sister had decided to go with my mother to the fields. And I was home alone with my two little brothers, and the plane came. And typically, my younger sister would hold one of the brother's hand, and they would go, and then I would carry the baby. But that day, I was home by myself, and my mom was in the field. And the plane came. I grabbed the Hmong baby carrier. I put my baby brother on my back, and then I put the other brother, I held his hand, and we went outside. And just so you know, I've been listening to stories all over the world. I've done hundreds of oral history interviews. But honestly, I don't like to tell my own personal refugee story. And I want to go on a tangent just a little bit to tell you why. Because I grew up in the Twin Cities. I have many, many Hmong friends. I escaped with my family intact. I have many, many Hmong friends who saw their parents killed in front of them, whose parents all drowned, and miraculously they survived. So I often don't want to tell my personal story because it's not as tragic as some of these other stories. But I think it's really important. Recently, people have been asking me for interviews, and I've had to think. And now I'm thinking back to these moments where I've actually tried to forget, but now I'm trying to remember again. So that one day, we went outside, the plane came, and the bomb was dropped. And I think I froze outside of the thatched house we had. And it's hard for me to talk about these because as I try to remember, those feelings are really strong again. So I don't know where I'm going, but you'll have to just bear with me. But luckily, the bomb dropped. No one was killed. A few of my cousins were injured by shrapnel. But that bomb in 1979 was the reason why the elders got together and said we would leave again. And as a child, an 8-year-old child, I have no idea. I don't understand these larger geopolitical issues. But I knew that we were leaving. So as a child, I was too young to carry the important things like food. Not that my baby brother wasn't important, but my job was to carry him. So I carried him, and we escaped. And the most interesting part for me is that as we escaped, again, my friends' stories, their experiences are so tragic, horrifying to even think about, to hear their stories. As we travel, like all other, the 100,000 Hmong people who fled Laos, same story. You travel by night, and you stay put by day. That's a story that's been told many times. But as a child, my parents are afraid. But I'm not sure if I was afraid. I was hungry, I was tired, frustrated, because we were told to be quiet. Babies were even drugged, and many of you who know Hmong stories, my little brother, my mother refused to drug him. As we got closer to the river, we were captured. We spent a month, and then we finally found a way to escape. The story is too long to talk about, but that particular moment where we were captured is very instrumental for me, and it will continue to impact me throughout most of my life. That's the first time that night we were put in a truck. In the truck, this big military truck. And the thing that I remember the most, and not remember so much, is that, in fact, the smell of exhaust, that smell will continue to stay with me forever. I was tired and sick. And then when we were finally trying to cross the river, we had a boat that had an engine. And the exhaust, again, made me really sick. And then I came to this country. The thing that worried me the most, right, isn't about, you know, the difficult schoolwork. I grew up in St. Paul. Isn't about the schoolwork. In fact, it was the fear every day of getting on the bus, smelling the diesel fuel, the exhaust, the trip, the 30-minute trip to a suburban, you know, area to go to school, and then the trip back. And then compounded with that sickness is the fact that we were impoverished refugee children. We were placed in some of the most challenging neighborhoods. And the children there, they were barely above us, the refugee children, but they made sure we knew that we were below them. We couldn't get off the bus where we needed to get off. We had to get off 2 blocks away and walk around. So for me, as I reflect about these experiences of refugee children, my parents, they risked their lives and all of our lives to come to the United States. It's really important for them. But we as children couldn't tell them what we were experiencing because they couldn't protect us anymore. They didn't have the power. They were now voiceless. They couldn't talk. They couldn't advocate for us anymore. So for me, as I reflect about that experience, I decided as a child, as a teenager, that where I began my life in America was not going to define what I would become. And so as we travel throughout the world, we become these numbers to be processed. Very recently, I went to visit my mother in Minnesota, and she gave me this bag. I took out the items because they're very important to my family, so I didn't bring them to show you. But she gave me this bag. For those of you who know refugees, this is a bag that contained all of our documents. We became nameless. We became T46159. This is what defined us throughout our journey from the refugee camp to Minnesota. And my mother gave it to me a few weeks ago, and I asked her, why are you giving it to me? Why don't you give it to one of my older brothers? And she said, I did. I offered it to them. But both of them said, just give it to Chia. She's the only one who would probably not misplace it. So this is my archive. These are the stories, the documents of my family. I'm speaking, and we're speaking. We're no longer just numbers, but we have names, our stories, our dreams, and aspirations. We'll be here, and I hope that it will be archived, and that someday when young people go to do research, they'll hear our stories. Thank you.
And that was Dr. Chia Vang, who is an author of many articles, obviously an oral historian, has collected many different stories from other refugees across the world. Just an amazing speaker. And there was so much going on with that story. I felt like you could have probably parceled that out into like 12 different stories alone.
Yeah, that could easily be an hour speech right there. I was really struck by the fact that she said it was unusual for her to tell her own story, perhaps one of the first times she may have told it, and the courage and the time it takes to dig that back up, because it must be extremely painful.
You know, and that's not something I'm unfamiliar with hearing from other storytellers, whether it's Exfabula related or otherwise. You know, a lot of people who do this for a living, and in fact, I was just speaking to a news reporter in Milwaukee who shall remain nameless, and they had mentioned to me that the reason why I haven't told my story about this particular thing is because it's just too painful. And other people like Dr. Chia Vang, as she mentioned, feel that her story isn't as relevant or isn't as tragic as other people's stories, so they don't even feel like their stories are relevant. And as an exfabulite, it's really important for us as humans in general to make sure that everybody feels valid, that everyone's voice is valid, and their stories are unique to their own person, and how important it is for everyone to hear those.
Absolutely. That's incredible to hear that someone wouldn't think that it's tragic enough or relevant enough when it's their story and it happened to them, and it's real people and real stories. It's very important to hear these stories from behind the headlines, as is the theme for today. So
definitely.
You have an event coming up in a little over a week, it seems.
We do, actually. We are having another volunteer orientation. We're asking Milwaukee to make a New Year's pledge to volunteer with Exfabula in digging out all of those really important, very relevant stories from Milwaukee. So our next volunteer orientation is going to be on Monday, December 17th. And more information related to the volunteer orientation or any other story slams coming up, competitive or non-competitive, you can go to exfabula.org.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming in, Leah. A very important topic today. And hope you enjoy the rest of the weekend. We'll see you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks.